Hey, are we on? Okay, so, you know, in general, in mathematics, it's good to unwrap boxes, at least one box back, okay? So, you know, you prove, I don't know, the Riemann hypothesis, okay? Obviously, you know, it's somewhere it will depend on the axioms. You don't want to unwrap all the boxes back, but you want to unwrap at least like one or two back at every level. In other words, you prove a lemma, then you use it to prove a theorem. In your mind, I mean, when you write it as a paper, it's lemma, and then the lemma gets used. But in your mind, you should visualize the proof of the lemma within the proof of the theorem. You should somehow open one box, okay? The lemma should not be a black box. It should be at least one level open, right? Maybe you don't have to open also the lemmas that go into it, but into the, you know, the sublemmas. What do I really mean, okay? What I really mean is that this is a lemma that you tend to kind of regard as a black box, and it's worthwhile to open it in the case at hand every time you see an instance of it. Okay? So the case at hand for us is the case where you're looking at the complex, where A, B, and C are the complex of it, of simplices in a topological space A. They're not abstract chain complexes of abelian groups. They are those of chains in a topological space A. These are chains in a topological space X that contains A, and these are chains in a topological space X where you ignore chains in A. So let's see what each of the steps means at this level. Okay? In a sense, I'm wasting your time because the lemma is proven. But I still want to see it. Okay? So the claim is, okay, there is a map from the homology of A to the homology of B to the homology of C to the homology of N minus 1 of A. Okay, what is each of these things? And why are there such maps? So the homology in A of A is basically things with no boundary that live inside A. For example, you know, maybe you had a torus inside A. That's a thing with no boundary. I mean, really, this thing, the torus, you should be thinking of it as if it's triangulated. It's made out of a union of triangles whose boundaries cancel each other, so that the overall boundary is zero. Okay, so really it looks like a union of many, many simplices. Okay, but pictorially it's just a torus. How do I map the homology of A to the homology of X? Oh, come on, that's ridiculous. It just goes to itself. Okay, now, what's the homology of X modulo A? So the homology of X modulo A contains funny elements. For example, it may contain an element that looks like this. Sorry, that looks like this. So it's a torus, but with a disk removed. But the disk is in A, so that it's zero in chains of X modulo chains of A. So this picture does not have a boundary as a picture in the homology of X relative to A. So if I take, or here's another, so this would be an element of H2. An element of H1 would be something like this, for example. So it's a line that starts at A and ends at A, so its boundary is zero relative to A. Okay? Okay, quite obviously, if you had something in the homology of X, I wish I had more than one color, and I do, but it's in my office, but anyway, suppose you had something in the homology of X, I don't know, something like that. What would it map to? No, I mean, I drew it in a place that's already occupied. So suppose I had something in the homology of X, where would it map to? In here, it would map to itself. That's kind of dull. It would look like this. It still has no boundary. Okay? But here's the interesting thing. If you have something in the homology of X relative to A, then I claim it maps back to the homology of A, one dimension less. So let me erase the currently resident element here, which bothers, which, no, you know what, no. Let me unerase it, but make here another copy of A, and try to explain how the connecting homomorphism goes from here to here. Basically, I'm going to trace back what I did here in algebra. So what did I do in algebra? I went backwards one step. Well, what does backwards one step mean? It just means take this creature here, the carafe. It's a carafe, right? I once bought my friend Hans Boden a carafe that had this shape because he's a topologist. But anyway, so take this shape and bring it to here. As a shape in here, what does it look like? Same. It looks like this. Sorry, rounded. Now it's not a homology class, because it does have a boundary as an element of X. It does have a boundary. However, okay, what's the next step? The next step is to push it down. What is to push down? To push down is to take the boundary. So the boundary of this becomes, so now the picture down here is, so here is X, inside it is A. I take the boundary of thing and by that, and by definition, it's a circle here. Or not by definition. By definition, it's some cycle inside A. And then, you know, here we had some calculations that says the thing that we get here goes to zero here, therefore it came from here. But basically, we see it came from here. It's a circle inside the subspace. So we pull it back to here and we get this circle. And that was our map. Our map was to take the carafe and map it to its rim. In other words, this is the boundary map. And that's why it's often called the boundary map. Okay? So I did step one of the 10 or so steps in the proof. I opened the box. I opened the first of the 10 boxes. I recommend that you open all the rest. Okay? So not only you should prove all the rest, but you should also verify that each of them has a nice geometrical meaning. Okay? Are you fine? Good. Pictures. Oh, and just for future reference, I copied. Why did I do that? Yeah, no, I copied the interesting parts of that were on that blackboard down to here. Okay. So the rest is light. So I have a few light things to say. In fact, that was light too. So I have a few light things to say before we go into excision, which is again heavy, but that will happen tomorrow. So before we go into the depth of excision. So first thing is basing the induction. So you see, I proved Z's assertion assertions for n greater than or equal to 2, but I really want them for all n, because I want to be able to deduce from the homology of S0, the homology of S1, and then the homology of S2. So I mean, I need also the low ends. There are two ways to do it. One way is to simply write the long exact sequences that you get at the low stages. Okay? So I sort of wrote them high, and when I wrote them high, I had situations where this was 0 and this was 0, and therefore this is an isomorphism. But if you go to the low places, then these things in the middle are not 0, but they're easy to analyze, and it's easy to, not easy, but not too hard to analyze and to find basically see directly what is going on at the low degrees. That's one way to go. And the other way to go is to notice that there was a mistake in the way we've defined homology. And had we not made this mistake, everything would have been simpler. Now, for various reasons, people always make the mistake, and the official definition includes the mistake. Okay? But because actually the official definition has its advantages. Okay? But still, let me tell you what is sort of, in some sense, a better homology. And the difference is in dimension minus 1. So what are, what is Cn? So Cn of x is, it's the collection of all linear, so it's the thing spanned by maps from the n-dimensional simplex into x. Oops, where's the good chunk? Here. And that makes sense for n greater than equal to 0. Okay? But what should C minus 1 be? C minus 1 of x should be the collection of all simplices defined on the negative one dimensional, so all maps from the negative one dimensional simplex into x, linear combinations of such things. What is the negative one dimensional simplex? You know, this is like, you should feel the same way as you felt when somebody taught you what's 0 factorial. You can't multiply 0 numbers with each other. At some point you realize that, yes, you can multiply 0 numbers with each other, and the answer is 1. So likewise, what's the negative one-dimensional simplex? So the negative one-dimensional simplex is the collection of all points t inside. So the n-dimensional simplex was points in r to the n plus 1. So this will be points in r to the 0, all of whose coordinates are positive, that's not hard, but furthermore, such that the sum of all of the coordinates, the sum over all coordinates of the ith coordinate is equal to 1. Now, I here runs on the empty set of coordinates. When you sum a sum over the empty set, you get 0. So it's the collection of all t's that satisfies 0 equals to 1. There are no such thing. So that's the empty set. Okay? But the empty set is not, well, I'm going to say it's not empty. It's empty, but it's not trivial. It's a set. So what is the collection of all maps from the empty set into X? The answer is, no matter what X is, there is exactly one map from the empty set into it. Namely, the map which maps the empty map. Okay? So this is always, independently of X, it's always the set generated by the maybe I'll call it the empty simplex, okay? The do-nothing map, okay? Sorry, yeah, it's not quite the do-nothing map, the empty map, okay? So it's always equal to Z, okay? But also, you know, since this isn't the conventional definition, let me add here a tilde. Okay, the conventional definition is that this is zero. But the correct definition is that this is Z. Okay? Now, what's the boundary map? So, I'm only disturbing the low degrees, right? The negative degrees, essentially. So really, I have to tell you, what is the boundary map from C0 of X into C negative 1 of X? Okay? So, suppose you have an element of C0 of X. An element of C0 of X, on the one hand, it's a point P inside X, but more precisely, it's a map from the zero-dimensional simplex into X. So it's a map from so P is really a map which maps the set 1 into X by, right, I mean, 1 is the unique element in R to the 1 whose sum of coordinates is 1. So it maps 1 into X by mapping 1 into P. Okay? So that's what this really means. Now what's the boundary? The boundary, okay, so what should I call this? Let's call it sigma. Let's call this map sigma P. Okay? That's the one-dimensional simplex at P. So now the question is, what is the boundary of sigma P? So the boundary of sigma P, by definition, is sum I goes from 0 to n, right? N here is 0. So it's the sum as I goes from 0 to 0. That's not an empty sum. That's a sum over one element. Of minus 1 to the I, okay, I mean, all of this, it's not the empty sum, but it does nothing. It's no summation here. I is equal to 0, and minus 1 to the I is plus 1. Of sigma P composed with the simplex that you get by erasing E0. Good. Now, what is this? You know, So what is this? This is the.
You remove that lock.
This is the map from the empty set. Right. This is the map from the. I mean, from the simplex defined with zero vertices. So that's the empty set. It's the map from the empty set into how does it work? I mean, I want to convince you that, well,
sorry, it's the map from the, it's the map from the empty set. It should map into this set, right? Into, or, sorry, I'm trying to make sort of the conventions. So, okay, so I mean, this is really CP circle empty bracket, but empty bracket is the map from delta minus one into delta zero. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't come out in delta zero. It should be that. It should map the no coefficient to the convex combination of zero vectors. And I want to convince you that the convex combination of zero vectors is actually the unique point here. Why? So why is it somehow the correct, you know, why is it sort of the correct? So I sort of want to go by backwards induction, the same way zero factorial is defined to be one factorial divided by one. So if you have if you have n equal points, for example, then their convex combination is themselves. If you drop one, it's still themselves. So now drop the last one, and it must be still the same thing. So and that same thing is P itself. Sorry, I'm not sure if that was convincing. I feel I should have done better. But anyway, the correct answer is that this is the unique zero-dimensional negative one-dimensional simplex. So sigma empty set. I mean, sort of. I got stuck in interpreting the composition. But if you don't interpret the composition, there is a unique answer that you can have. This must be a map from the empty set, which is the domain of this, into the range of that, and the range of that is a single point. Oh,
go ahead.
You know what?
Isn't it just like a map from the empty set to something, so it has to be the unique?
So it's the unique map on the empty set. Yes, you're right. Sorry. So it's not. Its image is not the point P. It's none.
Yeah.
So it's the unique map. Right. Okay. So you know what? I don't even care how I interpret this. The domain is the empty set. Sorry. Maybe that's the right answer. Okay. What difference does it make? Oh, so now I can define reduced homology of a space X to be the homology
in the algebraic sense, of the chain complex. Oh, did I say that this is called I hereby declare that this is called reduced homology. So it's the homology of the reduced complex of X. It's actually not reduced, it's extended, because you've added one step. But what does it do in practice? Oh, sorry, and likewise I can do for relative homology. What is relative homology? So, relative homology of X relative to, or you know what, let's even do, first of all, relative chain complexes. So what are relative chain complexes of X relative to A? By definition, it's the relative complex, it's C tilde of X modulo C tilde of A. This is true for every N. For N greater than or equal to, greater N or greater or equal to zero, I made no changes. For N equals to negative one, this is one dimensional, and this is one dimensional, so the result is zero as it was before. So that in fact hasn't changed. So relative homology stays the same. So that's the same as the chain complex of X and A without the tilde. Okay? Anyway, back to here, what difference does it make? It only makes a difference at the level of H0. Why? Well, because that's the only map that I've added. And what difference does it make? So what's reduced homology of K points? So before, it was z to the k. Now, it's the kernel of the map which maps the C0 tilde of k points. Let me just write it as k underscore. Into C tilde negative 1 of k underscore modulo, so it's this kernel, modulo the corresponding image. But since I'm talking about k points, there are no one simplices. Or more precisely, the one simplices are all trivial and their boundary is 0. So this is 0. Okay? So it's just the kernel. But this is the kernel of the map from z to the k. This is z to the k. I mean, the zero simplices inside k points is just the k points. So this is z to the k into, sorry, so this is equal to the kernel of z to the k mapping into z. By mapping every point, right, this is the calculation I did here. The boundary of each individual point is the generator. So this is by the map 1, 1, 1, 1, no, the map defined by the matrix 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. The kernel of this map is of dimension 1 less, well, the rank of this is 1, so the kernel is of dimension 1 less. So this is isomorphic to z to the k minus 1. Okay? So basically that's the only difference between reduced homology and unreduced homology. But that has implications. So in particular, the reduced homology of a point is simply zero, no matter what n is, for every n. Because for big N, it's zero, it was born zero. And for n equals zero, this is where the tilde applies, and you get zero. Therefore, the reduced homology of a disk
of dimension p. So the whole theorem of about homotopy equivalence, everything goes through about homotopic maps induce. Basically, everything goes through. You just have to be careful about what you mean by negative one-dimensional synthesis. So you still have this is still homotopy equivalent to that. It still has the same homotopy. So therefore, this is the same homology. So therefore, this is equal to zero for all n. And now, I can go back to this blackboard and drop the condition n greater than or equal to 2. So the way we got these isomorphisms was by sandwiching two of these spaces between homologies of disks. Now the homology of disks is always zero. So here I simply can drop this condition. I think I still need n greater than or equal to 1 because otherwise n minus maybe, you know what, I don't even want to think about, I only care about n greater than or equal to 1 anyway, in this case. But at the cost of adding reduced everywhere. But that's actually good news, because the reduced homology, the homology of S0 was two-dimensional. Because S0 has 2 points. Okay? So induction actually doesn't carry it to H1 of S1, which should be one-dimensional. However, now H0 of S0 is one-dimensional, and I do get what I want. Okay? Sorry, I hope you forgive me. I promised confusion. Maybe it's a bit confused, but basically if you correct the definitions, then the theorems, these theorems hold for every n, and in fact they're what you want, because now the homology of spheres is completely uniform for all n's. Yes.
So why do people use this definition?
Because actually this is extremely inconvenient. It's much more convenient to have H0 of a space to be z to the number of connected components, rather than z to the number of connected components minus 1. That's the only difference, and it's just more convenient. I don't know.
Yeah, this is all the book.
Yeah. Sorry, let me take pictures of that. And then move on to the next soft points. Again, these are sort of the hard stuff will come later. Okay, so what else? Come on. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. So I think I want to actually formulate excision and I want to go into excision, but do only the soft parts. And explain why the remaining part is not so trivial. So, theorem. And it's
called excision. So if you have a triple like that, or maybe a nesting like that, so you have a subset V of a set A, which is in itself a subset of a topological space X, but I want V to be deep inside A. And the one way to say it is to say that I want V closure to be contained in the interior of A. Okay? So really I have a triple of subsets, but V is deep inside A. Okay. So consider the homology of X minus V relative to A minus V. It obviously maps into the homology of X relative to A. So I could do it in, I could explain this into, this isn't yet a statement, this is the trivial part. I could do it in either of two ways. I could have told you that relative homology is a functor on the category of pairs of topological spaces, X, A, where A is a subset of X. I should have defined this category. I should have told you, okay, now that I know it's a category, then an homology is a functor on it, then this would be the map induced by the functor. But it's probably easy to just do it by hand. In other words, what does this mean? It means here is X, here is A, and deep inside it is V. Okay? Suppose you had something in X minus V. Sorry, and what is this? This is the same thing except without V. So suppose you had something in X minus V. So here I've excised V. V is not a part of the universe anymore. So suppose you had something in X minus V. Well, you can just map it to itself over here. This is bigger. It makes sense. If that thing is in A minus V, so it's trivial here, so it lies completely here, its image here will be trivial too, because it lies completely in A. So the fact that there is a map going this way is trivial. Okay? The non-trivial fact is that then this map is an isomorphism. Is an isomorphism. Okay? Why is it non-trivial? So before doing anything with it, why is it non-trivial? So why is this a hard theorem? Or not so hard, but why isn't it obvious? So I want to generate a map going backwards. Okay? So for the map going backwards, let me draw V here. But I drew it, but it's not a part of the picture. It's not a part of the, it doesn't appear here. I mean, it's just drew it for reference to know where it is. Okay? So, suppose I had a simplex here, like this one, which does not touch V. Where would I map it here? To itself. Likewise, this one, where would I map it here? To zero. It's contained in A, I don't care where it goes. Suppose I had a simplex that does touch V. So, a simplex like this. Where would I, but it's contained in A. Where would it go here? Well, it would go to. I mean, I want to take it to itself, right? But I cannot take it to itself because part of it is outside of this space, outside of this space here. However, I don't care. I can just map it to zero. Okay, so sort of small simplexes, there's no problem with them. But occasionally you hit a big simplex, a simplex that whose one side of which is outside of A, and the other side of it is inside V. Now, where do you map this one? You cannot map it to zero because a part of it is not zero. The boundary of that simplex, for example, will contain this interval, which is not zero even here. So you cannot map it to zero. You cannot map it to itself, because you wouldn't know where to put the what do you call this, the sharp edge. I mean, where would you put it? You just don't know where to map it to. Okay? So the solution, and the solution would be a bit technical, the solution will be to show that you don't need large simplices in order to compute homology. You can manage with homology. You can compute homology using only small simplices. Now, I need to define what small means in a general topological setting. But basically, the idea would be, let's break this, I mean, I would have to make it precise, but let's break this simplex into many, many, many smaller ones. Okay? So in some sense, at least intuitively, it shouldn't matter. At least intuitively, it shouldn't matter. And now there is no problem, because each of the small simplices is either fully inside of A, therefore you can map it to zero here, or fully outside of V, therefore you can map it to itself here. So the whole difficulty will be to have a meaningful breaking procedure with which to break simplices into smaller ones, and also say what it means to be sufficiently small. So that's next time. Anyway, assuming excision, I claim that we're done. Okay? One further soft thing. I stated excision for regular homology, but it's equally true for reduced homology. Because in fact, well, if only because reduced relative homology is the same as standard relative homology. Remember, I had this argument here that said that the chain complexes didn't even change. Okay. So now I claim that by excision, using excision, we're done. So in fact, the next class will start with a blackboard in which we forget everything about everything that ever happened before, and we only care about excision. Okay? So why are we done? So Hn minus 1 tilde of Sp minus 1 is isomorphic to, so now I'm copying, Hn tilde of, no, I wanted to go the other way. Yeah, so let's add one and go backwards. So I'm starting from here and going backwards. So Hn tilde of Sp is Hn tilde or not of Sp, comma, dp minus. Okay, so I've Sp relative to ignore the lower hemisphere. Now I want to excise the inside of the lower hemisphere. But to be fair, I can't. Because what? Because I need this condition. The things that I excise must be deep inside the thing I rel with. I do rel. So now I'll use excision, but I will only remove, so this is isomorphic to Hn of Sp. I will only remove things below the level of, give me a country south of the, basically the level of a degree minus one. Okay? So Sp minus dp less than minus one. So it's clear what I mean by that? Okay. Comma, dp minus dp less than minus one. Okay? Now, so the picture now is, this space looks like sort of an upper hemisphere where I add a little collar down at the bottom and rel by that collar. Okay, I didn't prove to you a statement about homotopy equivalence of pairs of spaces. But the definitions make sense. The definitions, you basically, maybe I should have talked about the category of pairs. Okay, but basically, everything we said about spaces and homotopy also makes sense for pairs of spaces and homotopy. So if you have XA and YB, then a map of the pair XA to the pair YB would be a map of X to Y, which maps A into B, which has the property that it maps the ignorable things to ignorable things. Okay? If you have two such maps, it makes sense to talk about homotopies. A homotopy will be a flow between one map to the other map, which always maps A into B, which throughout the timeline of the flow maps A into B. Basically, you keep going this way and all the constructions make sense. Nothing changes. So at the end, we have a reasonable notion of homotopy equivalence of pairs. And this pair is simply equivalent to the pair where you shrink the subset, the collar, into a single line. So this is by homotopy equivalence, which you have to properly generalize. So you get Hn of Sp minus minus the full lower hemisphere, comma, but the open lower, so basically the upper hemisphere, sorry, just simply dn plus, comma, s, comma, what remains of this collar when you shrink it, which is sp minus one dimensional sphere. But this is this, and it's isomorphic to h tilde of n minus one sp minus one, and we're done. Okay? I started from n and p, and it computed to being n minus 1 of p minus 1, and you can push it down to 0 of 0, which is z and not z2. Okay, so what remains is the hard part of excision. Sorry if... No, I'm not sorry, damn it. I'm not sorry. Why should I be sorry? I promised mess and you get a mess. Everybody should be happy. We can quit.